Welcome to a special edition of the Marketplace Roundtable podcast featuring Kirk Spano of Margin of Safety Investing, where Kirk discusses the big investment themes of our time that all share one thing in common: change. Kirk first started contributing to Seeking Alpha in 2015, building up a large following through his work covering stocks and options plays with asymmetric upside. Since 2017, Kirk has run Margin of Safety Investing here at the Seeking Alpha Marketplace, offering his subscribers a wide array of opportunities to build portfolios that beat the market while lowering overall risk. You can subscribe to Margin of Safety Investing by going to seekingalpha.com and typing Kirk Spano or Margin of Safety Investing into the search bar at the top of the site, or by going to seekingalpha.com/marketplace and looking for Margin of Safety Investing there. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Seeking Alpha is a website where authors from around the world share their ideas and analysis on the stock market. The Marketplace is our platform for authors to run investing analysis and idea services so that readers can take their investing to the next level. The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily those of SeekingAlpha.com or its employees. This podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes, and nothing expressed here should be taken as investment advice. And now your host, Kirk Spano.
Hello, everybody. This is Kirk Spano with Investing 2020s. This is our inaugural podcast. So Matt Tuttle is our first guest, and I thought I'd bring on somebody who A, I knew, but B, was very timely. So all this news about SPACs that's out there, I have talked about this with my clients and with my investment letter subscribers and talked to them about different ways that you can make money on SPACs. And there's a particular way that you can make money, not just by picking out companies. That's standard analysis once you know what the company is. But there's a way to make money on SPACs that I think a lot of people are overlooking. I've only found one person who's doing it as an ETF strategy. I happen to know him from about a decade ago, and I ended up farming out some of my investment management dollars. Oh my gosh. I mean, an investment guy giving his money to another investment guy. His name's Matt Tuttle, and he has a ETF that strategy is to buy SPACs just after they IPO and then ride them out for the hype cycle that we've talked about. He's found an asymmetric way, basically low downside with potential huge upside. But I'm going to let him explain it. So with that, Matt Tuttle, glad to see you again. Tell me about the new issue, the SPAC new issue ETF, what you're doing, your tactical management strategy. Just give me the 30,000 foot view and all the things that we've talked about probably 10 times before.
Yeah. So what we're looking to do is we're looking to buy a portfolio of generally about 60 to 80 pre-merger SPACs. And we're looking to buy them either on the IPO, so we're getting them at 10, or we're looking to buy them as close to that $10 price as possible. We will hold on to them until either they go up in value, or there's some sort of merger announced and they pop on that, or there's some sort of rumor and they pop on that. Then we'll sell it. And we'll take that money and we'll reinvest it in new SPACs, either on the IPO or around 10. So the goal is buy something at 10, have basically, because SPACs have a theoretical floor of 10. So, you know, as long as we're holding on to it, we've got no real downside. Wait till it goes up, sell it, and then buy something else at 10 and just rinse and repeat. You know, we're looking for a diversified portfolio of SPACs, as diversified as you can be. And we're looking for strong management teams that have a strong record of putting deals together. And we are very active during the day. You know, we'll have a SPAC that we've made money on, we'll sell it, and we'll buy something else trading at 10 or around 10. And we're doing that all day, every day.
All right. So I've looked at your website, and how many SPACs have come to market in the last 2 years now? Is it like 400 or 500? It's been
there,
a lot.
I don't know the exact amount, but it's been a lot, and it's gotten more and more and more. And really, I mean, you think about it kind of, you know, post-COVID, because pre-COVID, you know, SPACs were around, but, you know, no one really knew what they were. Post-COVID, it's really become, you know, not only a viable, but a real alternative to the traditional IPO process. And you've seen more and more, and it just seems like every week you've got more deals than the past week. It'll slow down at some point, but it's booming right now.
Yeah, and I think with so many SPACs looking for deals, I think that we can reasonably surmise that for the next couple of years at least, there are going to be a lot of SPACs around. So what I've talked to people about is you buy these SPACs close to the IPO price like you're doing, and then you play the hype cycle. So you don't need to know what their deal is going to be at this point. They're an IPO. They have a big pile of money there that backs the shares. It's close to $10 a share, the financial backing. You know, there's some fees and expenses in there. But I tell people between $9 and $10 is your downside, and your upside is theoretically limitless. So if Shamath, right, if he all of a sudden decides, I want to be in on this SPAC, you know, or starts a rumor, you know, it probably goes up a ton. So you've got the hype cycle that's on your side, but also if the deal that comes out is a good deal, the market likes it, right? They can spin it up pretty quick. What if the people on Reddit like it?
Exactly. I mean, that's what you saw with Churchill Capital. You know, it came out at 10, shot up into the teens, then into the 20s. And then the deal with Lucid was announced and it got into the 60s. It was crazy. We sold ours at 33, which looked like a bad thing for a week or two, and then it went down back into the 20s. And but you know, that's our strategy. I mean, we don't want valuations to get too far out of whack. Once something gets so far away from that $10 floor, you know, we'd rather sell it because now our downside. Now we do have some real downside in it. But yeah, I mean, it is virtually unlimited.
Right. Yeah. It's. I haven't, and you said something off air, and I'm sure you'll say it again. I haven't seen a situation from Wall Street. And you know, Josh Brown, the reform broker, he always talks about how the financial industry let him down. So I'm a guy who thinks that there's a lot of mediocrity in the financial industry and a lot of bait and switch and a lot of hooks and a lot of big expenses. This is one of those rare situations where if you understand what you're doing, which is always the key to any investment, right? But if you understand this, it's the opposite of what I've seen on Wall Street so many times, where you can buy these near the IPO price with incredibly limited downside. And then you got that big upside and you start thinking to yourself, well, why wouldn't I own a bunch of these? So that's what we started to do. We started to buy a bunch of them, but it's hard to manage that portfolio as an individual investor. How do I manage 20 or 30 SPACs on top of my 20 or 30 stock portfolio? It's really difficult to do. So tell me about the ETF, because I think that's a solution for an awful lot of people.
Well, yeah. And you brought up a great point. You need to own a lot of them, because all you're getting, I mean, when you've got a SPAC, is you're getting a management team has $10 per share in cash and they're looking for a deal. It may take them 2 years to find a deal. It may take them 2 weeks to find a deal. You just really don't know. So you put together a big portfolio of them. You manage the valuation so that, you know, you've got that $10 downside. So you're not paying up for anything. And then what happens is if you've got a portfolio of, say, 60 SPACs, 70 SPACs, a few of them are going to be home runs. A few of them are going to be triples, a couple going to be doubles. And then the vast majority is going to be singles. But it doesn't matter because you've got, you know, a few that are home runs. You just don't know ahead of time which those are going to be. So, you know, that's why you really do need, sometimes people say, well, Matt, just give me one SPAC. And I don't know. You got to have a big portfolio of them because you never know when they're going to put together a deal. And one of the most fun things is waking up in the morning, you know, turn on the Bloomberg at 5 o'clock and you see, all right, two of our SPACs announced deals. Oh, all right, this one's up 30% pre-market. This one's up 10. Beautiful. It's going to be a fun day. We're already starting out ahead of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. When I turn on my monitor in the morning and I see that, you know, three or four of my top holdings are, you know, up like triple what the market is that day, the market futures, I go, yay, I'm going to put some extra cream in my coffee.
Yeah. You're starting ahead of the starting line.
Yeah. You know, I really do like the systematic approach you have. I'm surprised. And again, maybe this comes back to Wall Street. I just don't understand why there's not all kinds of people buying these near, you know, in that with a 10 handle. mean, if you can buy these with a 10 handle, or I even told people up to an 11 handle, if you're buying the unit and you're getting the warrant at a bit of a discount, you know, I don't know that everybody understands those mechanics. Can you give maybe the 30-second view on the unit to the stock, to the warrant?
Yeah, but I can also answer your question why people aren't doing it. I mean, you've got a couple of problems. Number one, there's still a lot of brokerage firms that, you know, have issues with SPACs. They, you know, pair it with Bitcoin and marijuana, which makes absolutely no sense, but they don't allow their clients to buy it. Number two, people don't understand it. And number three, people typically don't buy it until the hype has been announced. You know, that's when your $10 SPAC has gone up to 20. And, you know, now you're buying something at 20 that, yeah, your downside's limited, but I mean, you still have some massive downside there. So, you know, how it works is a sponsor group says, hey, we're going to issue this SPAC. It's going to be 100 million, 200 million, 500 million, whatever it is. It's going to come out at $10 a share. That $10 is going to sit in trust. So, you know, no one's messing with it. No one's investing it. No one's touching it. What you get as the shareholders, you get the $10 of cash in a trust, and you're typically getting a partial warrant to buy more shares down the road at a higher price. It's typically $11.50. And then what you have is you have the possibility that this management team is going to put together a deal that's going to make your $10 in cash sitting there and your fractional warrant worth more than $10, whether that's 11, whether it's 12, whether it's 60. Again, you don't know how Wall Street's going to react to that deal, but you just want it to be worth more than the $10 you paid for it.
Right. I'm having such a hard time wrapping my head around, for example, why isn't Wall Street Bets all over this? I mean, I don't want to get into their universe. I don't want the SEC calling me, but I take a look at what's going on out there. I'm like, this really is, and I know that if there's a popular personality, they've jumped on some of those, but I just can't see why there's not a ton of money flowing into these $10 handle SPACs. It blows my mind that it's not happening and that they're chasing stocks like GameStop. You know, 3 years ago, I wrote an article on Seeking Alpha where I said GameStop is going to go the way of Blockbuster if they don't move towards a digital platform. They shrink their store base and they just have experiential big stores, get rid of all the little ones. And I went to the GameStop in Times Square a few years back, and I was like, what a dump. You know, you can't do anything there. I mean, the only thing that was worthwhile there was the life-size statue or mannequin of Harley Quinn. And I was like, okay, now this is all right. This is kind of cool. But, you know, you take a look at what people are interested in buying, and they're reaching so far out for risk, right? And this is so low risk, but with all that upside. I don't know. I know you've already said what you had to say, but do you think there's a change in psychology coming? Do you think it's a question of information?
So yes and no. I mean, you know, the Reddit guys, the Wall Street Bets guys, you know, SPACs are never going to be as sexy as GameStop and AMC. You know, they're not supposed to go up 100% in a day.
Right.
And, you know, they're supposed to come out at 10 and go to 12 or 16 or 18. So, I mean, it's really, to me, it's an alternative asset class. Yeah. It's a way for individual investors to gain access to private equity, venture capital-like returns without the downside. It's an alternative place to put cash. There's a lot of different uses for it, but if it's just not as sexy as some of the other stuff. So, you know, I know we've got a lot of Reddit guys and people buying our ETF, and that's great. But the majority that I'm talking to are coming from family offices, more conservative hedge funds that are looking to use SPACs the way they really should be used, which isn't, you know, it's just not a lottery ticket.
Yeah. So this is really a smart money way of doing something, a smart money way of investing.
It's an asymmetrical return stream, like you talked about. You don't get that. When Wall Street typically comes to you with an asymmetrical return stream, it's, you know, hey, Kirk, this product, we're going to limit your upside, but your downside's unlimited. Look, isn't this awesome? Well, No, not really. But here I'm coming saying, look, I'm going to limit your downside, but your upside's unlimited. I mean, I there's no real other place to find something like that.
Yeah. You know, I've always been afraid of this phrase. It's different this time. I've always been afraid of that phrase. I remember watching an interview with Jimmy Rogers at the end of 1998 on CNBC with the same talking heads that were there then that are there now. And Jim Rogers said, hey, this is my last appearance for a while. I'm going to drive around the world for the next 2.5-3 years. They called it the Millennium Adventure, him and his fiance. And they said, well, who's going to manage your money? And he says, I sold everything. And they said, why? Why did you sell everything? You know, it was the end of 1998. The market was, you know, started to head up into its peak. And he says, market's in a bubble. It's going to come down. And one of the guys, it might have been Joe Kernan. I don't want to attribute it to him, but I think it might have been him. He goes, but isn't it different this time? And Jim Rogers looked and said, you know, that's probably the most dangerous phrase in investing. It's different this time. And he talked about how it's never really different. It's changed a little bit right around the edges, but most things rhyme from the past, right? The past rhymes with the future. And now this is one of those crazy rare things that I can say, I think it is different this time. All the math adds up, right? All the rules add up. I think where people investing on their own without a systematic approach, like you could get in trouble, is if I'm managing that 20 or 30 SPAC basket and they start announcing deals and I don't get out of a bad deal. And now it's just a stock, right?
Oh, yeah.
It can totally go anywhere.
Well, now.
So your systematic approach of buying the IPOs and basically getting the hype and, you know, selectively keeping a few just a little longer. I don't know, man. I think you're onto something here, Matt. I think the SPAC and new issue ETF probably deserves a lot more money. I'd be kind of surprised if you don't get more institutional money. I know that you're talking to family offices, which is something I talk about, family offices. I look at their asset allocation that gets released a few times a year. I'd be interested to know how much they're allocating in this direction, because I got to think, you know, I'm sure a lot of them don't use an ETF, but I just got to think that the strategy carries so much merit as a way to say, look, we have upside of limited downside. I can't see this working against you or the market in general of SPACs, you know, until a lot more of these companies have deals.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the smart ones are looking at it. And you mentioned options. I mean, I'm not recommending anyone do this, but I've had some family offices and investment banks tell me they are doing this, is they're looking at our portfolio and saying, look, you've got limited downside. Wall Street doesn't totally understand that, and they're writing puts against our fund.
Selling puts.
You know, yeah, there's a whole bunch of people doing that. They're going out writing long-term puts, figuring, you know, there are levels that it's unlikely that our portfolio would drop below. And their hypothesis, again, I'm not recommending anything, but their hypothesis is the puts probably aren't priced right, because they're priced based on kind of asymmetric, you know, they're priced based on symmetrical returns. Like, you know, anything else, we've got just as much downside as we do have upside, but, you know, we really don't. So whether that idea works or not, who knows, but it's, I know some people are out there doing that.
Yeah, if there's enough volume, that's something that I'll look at doing, because I do a show.
I mean, Kate, we've got a very robust options market on the fund. So if you like options, take a look at it and, okay, you know, again, make your own decisions. But I know people are doing it.
Yeah, we're big put sellers. So we sell a lot of cash secured puts. I don't let my people use margin, but we sell cash secured puts. And, you know, if we can add a point here and there, it's, you know, a lot of times it's free money, or you end up buying something that you like cheap. Yep. You know, break my heart, right? So, all right. Is there any questions that I'm not good enough to ask you that I should, that you want to answer?
So, you know, I think the only other question I can think of is kind of how does this fit in a portfolio?
Okay.
And, you know, we really see it as something from time to time, it's going to be correlated with stocks, especially momentum stocks. But for the most part, it's really not that correlated with what's going on in the market. It's a different thing. And I mean, what we saw back in January, for example, when the market was going down, our SPACs were going up. They did go down with the momentum crash. But, you know, long term, this is going to be something that's not going to be totally correlated with the market. So it really, it deserves a place in pretty much everybody's portfolio.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't add a lot of ETFs to my ETF universe, but I added this one. And, you know, that's why I gave you a call, because it just makes so much sense to me. And hearing the way that you put it is confirming a lot of the things that I read and, you know, I thought about, and it's just like, okay, because the question you always ask is, where can this screw me up, right? Where, what am I missing?
What can go horribly wrong is the question I always ask.
Right. Well, what can make people not like me? And, you know, I mean, I got so such a long list there playing poker that, you know, but with the investing, I want people to like me. And yeah, so the SPAC and new issue ETF, symbol SPCX, I think folks should take a look at it. We will provide some links for you to go take a look at this prospectus and the website and understand really what they're doing here. And Matt Tuttle, thank you very much for coming on. And
for having me.
You had actually mentioned, you know, I forgot about this. You had mentioned another ETF. Can you quick do an airdrop on the other ETFs that you're looking at starting up?
Yeah, so we're launching four that'll be out in the next couple of months. Two around SPACs. So one is going to be a de-SPAC ETF that invests in companies that have come out of SPAC mergers. The other one is going to be the inverse of that. So it'll be a way, if these things ever crater, to be able to make money off that. Then the third ETF we're launching is called FOMO, obviously fear of missing out.
Yeah.
And some of that is going to be invested in SPACs as well, because SPACs certainly fit into FOMO. And then the last one we're launching is FATT, which is going to be a positive carry tail risk ETF. So basically designed to, you know, if the market's going up, to plot around and maybe make a couple of bucks here and there. And then when we have another coronavirus crash or 2008, to make about as much money on the upside as the market makes on the downside.
Wow.
So we got all that stuff coming down the pipe.
So you expect that the inflows on the FATT, do you think people will be wise enough to get into it and let it sit and wait? Or
that's what it's designed for. Whether people do that or not, probably not. But we wanted to design something that you could just put into a portfolio. And if the market's going up, it can still make money, but it really pops when the market goes down.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, for people who are using ETFs, mainly because A, it's hard to be an expert picking stocks and doing macro to figure out where the tail risks are and then make the appropriate bets. The ETFs that I think get constructed well are really interesting. And so you take a look at Bill Ackman made all those tail risk bets at the start of COVID and he made a ton of money, right? If people had had a small percentage of their portfolio in something like what you're discussing and what you're going to launch, it just provides so much protection, right? You don't have to worry about going, should I go 50% cash right now? You know, what's my emotional response? If you have the right asset allocation, if you say, okay, I'm always going to be around 60% stocks, and the other 40% I have to build in a way that is less correlated, can have home run upside when things go bad. Maybe, you know, my metals, whatever it is. If you're a Bitcoin guy, you're Bitcoin. You know, I mean, I'm always 60% in stocks guy. And then what do I do with the other 40%? How do I make that portfolio less risky and offer me some upside if the market just does what it normally does, which is drift upwards three quarters of the time, right? Yeah. It's that other 40% that you have to say, okay, how do I make my risk-adjusted returns good enough, but also allow me to sleep at night? And that FATT, that's a very interesting idea. I think we might have to talk about that one when it comes out.
Not a problem. 2 to 3 months, it should come out. But yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Once you start asking the question, hey, should I change my asset allocation? What, you know, whether on the down or the up, typically that's when it's too late.
Right.
You know, the market's already gone down 30%. Hey, should I get more conservative? Yeah, 2 months ago, maybe, but now, yeah, a little too late.
Yeah, I ran into that at the start of the year. I have YouTube webinars out there, and the front title is Sell Almost Everything in January and in February. Well, people sold near the bottom in March. And they said, well, you said to sell. Yeah, I said it a month or two ago. I said it in January because of the valuations. And then I sent out a tweet on January 23rd. And I said it was an article about coronavirus, the first one I saw in the regular press. And I had seen it in some other places a couple of weeks earlier. And when it came out on CNN, I sent this out and I said, hey, this is the most important story in the world. And I started telling everybody to sell for the next 4 or 5 weeks. And then the market went down and then people sold at the bottom and they blamed me. And I'm just like, nah, that's not how asset allocation works, man. So, you know, you look at this stuff and you know, I've got 25 years of experience. You got, are you a little bit more than that?
1990, whatever that is.
Yeah, it's a long time, man.
It's like 100 years, I think.
Yeah. Hey, you look so much better than me. Gosh. You know, I think about the asset allocation aspects. And if you're building an asset allocation, I know people fall in love with all sorts of things, right? And, you know, you see all these people are like, oh, I got 60% of my money in REITs. And I just put my hand on my head and I'm like, do you understand what happens if the 10-year treasury really goes to 3%? You know, I just like, that's not the right way to build an asset allocation. Now REITs are in that 40% that I, you know, I have REITs.
I do too, but not 40%.
Yeah, right. Not 60% either. You know, it's like 12%. And you take a look at this and you're like, okay, tail risk. How do I manage tail risk? And you know, we're going to talk about that because I don't think that that's a discussion that people have and they should. And it's something that financial advisors should be talking about. I really think that that is something that your RIA out there, right? Your registered investment advisor out there, if they're really, truly building an asset allocation, how do you not put something in there for macro?
I mean, you're preaching to the choir. And I think what historically, if you did anything, it was treasuries. And, you know, that hasn't worked so well this year.
No, right. It was, well, you know, at some point, I have said that eventually there'll be helicopter money. There has to be. There's only, I don't know how you fix the retirement system, which is going to go bankrupt in the next decade. How do you fix the retirement system without some sort of just helicopter drop of money, right? And it'll be inflationary, but not as much as people think because you can tie it to Social Security payments and Medicare and, you know, around the world, they have to do this. You know, you can tie it to things that drip the money in for a long time, but you need that big hunk of money to drop in initially to fund everything for the next 30 years, right?
Yep.
What if they do that at some point? What if the fix is similar to what they're doing now, but without creating debt? They just create the money. Interest rates have to go up at that point.
Yep.
I mean, that, you know, the whole idea of what's coming demographically and from debt, I don't know when the next shoe drops. I don't know if it's in 4 years or 6 years or 10 years or 12 years, but it's going to happen during my career in the next 20. And when it happens, it's going to be a shock because all of a sudden we're going to have big problems. It's going to scare people. People are going to run for the hills. Other people are going to get rich. Other people are going to have planned for it and say, I'm going fishing. You know, I'm still going golfing. And I think that, yeah, I will tell you, I love this SPAC idea. I love the SPAC and new issue ETF. And the other ones are interesting to me. I think that they can be traded for sure, just by the way you describe them. That fat T, that seems like something that it ought to just be in a sleeve in your portfolio for the what if situation.
Exactly what it's designed for. And you're right, people will probably try to time it, but it's designed, just put it in your portfolio, forget about it. You know, market's up 30, maybe it'll be up 4 or 5, but market's down 30, it's going to be up 30.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. All right. Once again, Matt Tuttle, the SPAC and new issue ETF. The links will be here in the broadcast down below. And thank you very much. And we'll talk again maybe in 3 or 4 months when that new ETF comes out.
All right. Thanks.
If you've been enjoying the Seeking Alpha Marketplace Roundtable podcast, you can subscribe through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also give reviews on those platforms to help other investors discover this podcast. Kirk Spano runs the Margin of Safety Investing Service here at the Seeking Alpha Marketplace. You can subscribe to Margin of Safety Investing by going to seekingalpha.com and typing Kirk Spano or margin of safety investing into the search bar at the top of the site, or by going to seekingalpha.com/marketplace and looking for margin of safety investing there.